நண்பர்கள், நான் வந்து இப்போ 30 வருஷம் ஆச்சு இந்த தமிழ் தேசத்தில் வந்திருக்கேன். என்ன குருக்கள் கூட தமிழர். இந்த தேசத்தில் மகிமை எல்லாம் எனக்கு கொஞ்சம் கொஞ்சம் தெரியும். யாரா தமிழ் பேசாக்க எனக்கு தெரியும், ஆனால் பேச முடியாது சரியா. அதனால என்ன மித்திரர் இருக்கார் நடராஜன், அவரண்டு கேட்டுக்கொண்டிருக்கேன் தமிழில். நான் என்ன இங்கிலீஷில் சொல்கிறேனோ அது பாஷாந்தர் பண்ணுறதுக்கு. As you all know, today is the 5th anniversary of the founding of this city of Oroville. Mother has chosen this place not because it is attractive from agricultural or industrial or normal point of view. She had offers of hundreds and thousands of acres from many places in India. Many luxurious places could have been got even in South India. But it is divinely ordained that this should be the place of the city of God. And that is why, with all its handicaps, soil, water, and every other conceivable difficulty, she has chosen this site for the city of God.
இன்று அரவல் ஆரம்பித்து 5 ஆண்டுகளாகின்றன என்பது உங்களுக்கு எல்லோருக்கும் தெரியும். இந்த புது நகரத்தை உற்பத்தி செய்வதற்கு ஸ்ரீ அன்னை இந்த இடத்தை தேர்ந்தெடுத்திருக்கிறார்கள். இந்த இடத்தை அவர்கள் தேர்ந்தெடுத்ததற்கு காரணம் இதனுடைய மண் வளம் அல்லது தொழில்நுட்பம் அல்லது மற்ற வேறு சௌகரியங்களுக்காக அல்ல. இந்தியாவில் பல இடங்களிலிருந்து ஆயிரக்கணக்கான ஏக்கர் நிலங்கள் இதற்காக கொடுப்பதற்காக பலர் முன்வந்தார்கள். ஆனால் தெய்வ சித்தம் இந்த இடத்தில் அந்த புது நகரம் அமைய வேண்டும் என்று இருப்பதனால் அதை ஸ்ரீ அன்னை தன்னுடைய திருஷ்டியில் உணர்ந்து இந்த இடத்தை தேர்ந்தெடுத்திருக்கின்றார்கள்.
In choosing this place for this new city in service of God, she has chosen all of you, sons of the soil, and has instructed us that you must be given the first priority. There are many difficult conditions imposed upon people who are coming from all parts of the world. But the conditions for you to become Orovillians are the minimum. They are kept absolutely the minimum.
இந்த நகரத்தை இந்த இடத்தில் தேர்ந்தெடுத்த பிறகு இதில் குடிமக்களாக சேருவதற்கு உங்களுக்கு ஒரு சந்தர்ப்பம் கொடுக்கப்பட்டுள்ளது. தெய்வ கைங்கரியத்தில் பங்கெடுத்துக் கொள்வதற்கான சந்தர்ப்பம் உங்களுக்கு எதிரே காத்து கொண்டிருக்கின்றது. உலகத்தின் பல பகுதிகளிலிருந்து மக்கள் வந்து இந்த இடத்தில் அரவல் மெம்பர்களாக சேர்கின்றார்கள். இந்த உறுப்பினர்களுக்கு இடக்கூடிய நிபந்தனைகள் உங்களுக்கு கிடையாது. அவர்களுக்கு ஏற்பட்டுள்ள நிபந்தனைகள் பல, அவை மிகவும் கடினமானவை. அந்த நிபந்தனைகள் படி இங்கு உள்ளவர்கள், இந்த இடத்தில் அரவுல் இடத்தில் உள்ளவர்கள் இதில் உறுப்பினர்களாக அங்கத்தினர்களாக சேருவது என்றால் மிக சிரமம். உங்களுக்கு ஏற்பட்ட நிபந்தனை மிக குறைவு. ஆனால் அரவுலில் முதல் குடிமகனாக இருக்கும் உரிமையை உங்களுக்கு பரிபூரணமாக ஸ்ரீ அன்னை அளித்துள்ளார்கள்.
Here, in this new city, we are not building life in the usual commercial way which is being done elsewhere in the world. We are not here to earn money, to become rich. God is sending money here, resources here, so that those who live in Auroville may live in service of God and of humanity. We are not building private property. All will serve the city, and the city will take care of everyone. Everyone will be looked after at his level. If you are not ready to become full members of Auroville and live for Auroville, you will be given preference in areas where payment is made for labor. You will be the first choice. You will be trained. You will be given employment as long as such employment can be provided. Our hope and our wish is that you all will realize this character of the city, that we are not here to earn money, not here to take, but to give what we have to God. Some people give their money, some give their property, some give their lives, some give service. You can choose what you want.
அரவுல் நகரத்தில் வாழ்க்கை வெளி உலகத்தில் இருப்பது போல் அமைப்பதற்காக இந்த நகரம் ஏற்பட்டதல்ல. வெளி உலகத்தில் வாழ்க்கையை அனுபவிப்பதற்காகவும், பணம் சேகரிப்பதற்காகவும், சொத்து சேகரிப்பதற்காகவும், ஆடம்பரம் தேடுவதற்காகவும் வெளி உலக வாழ்க்கை அமைந்துள்ளது. இங்கு தெய்வ வாழ்க்கையை வாழ்வதற்காக இந்த நகரம் அமைக்கப்பட்டுள்ளது. பணம் சம்பாதிக்க வேண்டும் என்ற அவசியம் இங்குள்ளவர்களுக்கு இல்லை. பணம் வெளியிலிருந்து வருகின்றது. வெளியிலிருந்து என்றால் தெய்வ கைங்கரியத்துக்காக தெய்வத்தில் ஈடுபட்டு உள்ளவர்கள், தெய்வீக வாழ்க்கையை லட்சியமாக மேற்கொண்டவர்கள் இங்கு பணம் அனுப்புகின்றார்கள். ஆகையினால் இங்கு இருப்பவர்கள் பணம் சேகரம் செய்து, பணம் சம்பாதித்து வீடு கட்ட வேண்டும், நிலம் வாங்க வேண்டும், சொந்த சொத்து சேகரித்துக் கொள்ள வேண்டும் என்ற நிபந்தனை அவர்களுக்கு கிடையாது. அது அவர்களுடைய லட்சியம் அல்ல. உங்களுடைய பங்கு என்ன என்ற கேள்வி ஏற்படுகிறது. முழு அரவுல் மெம்பர்களாக சேர்வதற்கு தயாராக உள்ளவர்கள் சேர்ந்து கொள்ளலாம். அவர்கள் எல்லா அரவுல் உறுப்பினர்களைப் போலவும் எல்லா விதமான சௌகரியங்களையும் எல்லா விதமான உரிமைகளையும் அனுபவிக்கலாம். சேருவதற்கு நிபந்தனையே அநேகமாக கிடையாது. அப்படி இல்லை, இவர்களுடன் நம்மால் சேர்ந்து வாழ முடியாது, அவர்களுடைய கலாச்சாரம் வேறு, அவர்களுடைய பழக்க வழக்கங்கள் வேறு, அவர்களோடு நாம் எப்படி குடித்தனம் செய்வது என்றால், எந்த அளவில் அவர்களுடன் சேர்ந்து கொள்ள உங்களுக்கு அபிப்பிராயம் இருக்கின்றதோ, உங்களுடைய மனம் இடம் கொடுக்கின்றதோ, அந்த அளவில் சேர்ந்து கொள்வதற்கு உங்களுக்கு உரிமை உண்டு. முழு அங்கத்தினர்களாக சேர்ந்து அவர்களுடைய வாழ்க்கையை வாழ விரும்பவில்லை என்றால், நான் பணம் பெற்றுக்கொண்டு, ஊதியம் பெற்றுக்கொண்டு என்னுடைய சேவையை கொடுக்கின்றேன் என்ற அளவில் சேர்கின்ற அளவில் இருக்கலாம். இங்கு வெளியில் தான் பெற்றுக்கொள்வதை விட தான் தெய்வத்துக்கு கொடுப்பதற்காக ஏற்பட்ட நகரம் என்பதனால், எதை கொடுக்கின்றோம் ஆத்மாவை கொடுக்கின்றோமா, பணத்தை கொடுக்கின்றோமா, சேவையை கொடுக்கின்றோமா என்ற அளவில், எந்த அளவில் மனம் இடம் கொடுக்கின்றதோ அந்த அளவில் அரவில்லில் இங்கு இருக்கின்றவர்கள் ஈடுபாடு கொள்ளலாம்.
It is in this spirit that we look upon you not as employers and employed, but as brothers, brothers and sisters, elder brothers and younger brothers on this path to God. We want you all to share the blessings of God that God has made available to us. It is our concern to see that your economic conditions improve with the growth of the city. As resources multiply, the resources that will be made available to you will also increase. For us, it is one family that is growing. We have no distinctions between rich and poor, one community and another, one nation and another. All are children of God.
இங்கு முதலாளி தொழிலாளி என்ற வேறுபாடு கிடையாது, ஏழை பணக்காரன் என்ற வேறுபாடு கிடையாது. ஆண்டவன் எல்லோருக்கும் பிரசாதம் அளிக்கின்றான். எங்களுக்கு அளித்த பிரசாதத்தை உங்களுடன் பகிர்ந்து கொள்ள நாங்கள் பிரியப்படுகின்றோம். ஒரு நாட்டு எந்த நாட்டிலிருந்து வந்தவர்கள் என்ற வேற்றுமை இல்லாமல், ஜாதி வேற்றுமை இல்லாமல், மத வேற்றுமை இல்லாமல், படிப்பு பண வசதி வேற்றுமை இல்லாமல், உங்களுடன் நீங்கள் எங்களுடன் பழகுவதற்கும் நாங்கள் உங்களுடன் உறவாடுவதற்கும் பிரியப்படுகின்றோம். இதுவே ஸ்ரீ அன்னையின் அபிப்பிராயம். ஆனால் நாம் எந்த அளவில் அதை ஏற்றுக்கொள்ளுகின்றோமோ அந்த அளவில் பலன் கிடைக்கும். அது மனத்தை பொறுத்ததே தவிர செயலை பொறுத்ததல்ல. மனம் தெளிவாக இருந்து அதற்குண்டான செயல் ஏற்பட்டால் அதற்கான தெளிவு வாழ்க்கையில் நாளைய தினம் கண்கூடாக காணலாம்.
We are very happy that you all have participated in this anniversary meeting. We wish all of you well. We wish all of you to walk with us towards our goal.
நீங்கள் இந்த கூட்டத்தில் கலந்து கொண்டதற்காக, இந்த ஆண்டு நிறைவில் கலந்து கொண்டதற்காக நாங்கள் மிகவும் சந்தோஷப்படுகின்றோம். நீங்களும் நாங்களும் சேர்ந்து ஒன்றாக இந்த லட்சியத்தை அடைவதற்காக நாம் நடைபோட வேண்டும் என்று கேட்டுக்கொண்டு இத்துடன் முடித்துக் கொள்வோம்.
During our last two meetings, we discussed the role of concentration and renunciation in spiritual life. Whichever the path that one chooses, the path of works, the path of devotion, or the path of knowledge, renunciation and concentration are to be applied in the way that corresponds to the distinctive lines of development of those yogas. Thus, for instance, in the path of works, what is to be renounced is the ego sense, the sense of the doer, the way of doing works as would forge chains of karma. It is the sense of the doer that is to be renounced. The concentration has to be on the spirit of consecration, the spirit of surrender, and the process of working it out in detail. In the path of love, what is to be renounced is what passes for love. The life of the senses, the demand of the unpurified senses, whether in the realm of the material world or in the realm of the spirit. The demands of this unpurified senses, they have to be renounced, and the concentration must be on a sustained and increasing purification of the being, cultivation of devotion leading to adoration, adoration melting in love. In the path of knowledge, renunciation, we have seen, is in the rejection of what is not true, of what is not the self. Concentration is on the forging of union, of identity with the self. How precisely these twin principles, positive and negative, passive and active, are to be harnessed in the path of knowledge is the theme of our discussion this evening. The aim of the traditional path of knowledge, as you all know, is the discovery of ourselves. At the present, as he lives in ignorance, the relations of the true self and ourselves and this life of man, the relations are based on a certain falsity. Man is not aware of his true self, nor is he aware of the true self of others. His actions, his movements, physical, vital and mental and emotional, are based on certain ad hoc arrangements arrived at between nature, executive nature, and the surface soul. It is the aim of the path of knowledge to break through this system of false relations basing our everyday life and arrive at the right relation between ourselves and ourself, between ourselves and the self of all. As things stand at present, one is inclined to feel that the body, the physical body, is oneself. Intellectually, we may be knowing and we may talk or write that we are not the body, we are something else possessing the body. But in practice, the identification with the body is so complete that man is just a physical creature subject to the changes of moods, needs, and other movements of the material body.
this relation has to be set right. Similarly, there is the individuation of life force in each person. One identifies oneself with the particular formation of life force in his own body. He forgets that his own life force, what he calls his own life force, is but a current, one wave of the ocean of the universal life energy that is flowing in the universe. So too, one thinks that his mind is all. He forgets that his mind is but one part of a large and infinite mind that is looming over this living material creation. This identification of the being of man, as far as he is conscious, with the physical body, with the life force activating the physical body, with the mind pretending to lead this body and its life force, this identification completely falsifies the whole life relation. It is the first lesson of the path of knowledge that one is not the body, one is not the life force, one is not the mind. The process is twofold, negative and positive. Negatively, one goes on affirming to oneself, I am not this, I am not that, I am not that. As one goes on affirming, one's freedom from the constrictions of the body, mind and life grows or formed in one's consciousness that attracts the liberating movements from lower nature. One gets free from involvement in the body, in the triple bondage, first on levels of which he is not conscious, and thereafter on levels of which he is half conscious, and ultimately on levels where he is fully conscious. It is a long process. It has to be worked out in detail. At each step, this disassociation from the body, from the life force, from the mind, has to be put into operation. The mind must be freed from its total identification with the body and its needs. The mind has got into a habit, for instance, of suffering with the body that suffers, joying with the body that enjoys. In short, the mind in most has no independent existence from the body, from the life in the body. It is tied as a wheel to the chariot. It imagines it is leading the mind, but it is not. The mind is a slave in the present economy of nature, organized in ignorance and ego. The mind is a slave. The soul is not yet awake. It is the business of the path of knowledge to teach the mind to separate itself from its involvement, from its identification with what it is not. And this done, by the negative process of rejection, of renunciation, to educate it in a more positive way, to turn it to its own truths. The mental being, the mind Purusha, the being that presides over the mental realm, as that being is freed from the hectic movements of the lower nature, it tends to fall quiet. And then another process must be initiated of telling the mind, of teaching the mind, that I am the Self, the Self that is aloof, the Self that is the witness, the Self that is the master. These are the three gradations. The mind should be trained to be educated, to be orientated towards the Self of which it is a projection on the mental level. As a result of this progressive affirmation of its inner identity with the Self, the mind puts on another character, the character of the liberated Self, as man, the mental being, disassociates himself from the material frame and identify himself more and more with the witness Self, with the silent Self, there is an inevitable tendency to withdraw from action, to retreat, to renounce the life, to stop the false account, but not yet to open the right account. Sri Aurobindo says that this liberation from the necessity of having to work in the rounds of nature is indispensable. The power to desist from action is also necessary, but certainly it is not at all advisable, not at all called for, to retire from action. For after all, action is the characteristic of manifestation, the manifestation of the Divine Reality. The seeker has to act, but act in an uninvolved way. It will not do to make oneself a prisoner of a fad of inaction. One must not be bound to action, but also one shall not be bound to inaction. A stage arrives when from this poise in the witness Self, in the silent observing Self, action and inaction cease to be different. It is something else that acts, carries out the sanction, the will, a will that does not emanate from one's personal Self, but is reflected in this Self from high on. This state has to be cultivated and normalized. The world for the seeker of the traditional path of knowledge, it is enough to reject the world as a circumstance of a false relation between nature and its Lord.
he escapes or he seeks to escape into the beyond, whether the beyond is full of bliss or an ineffable nothingness, nirvana. There he ends. The path, traditional path of knowledge, leads to this liberation. But for a seeker of the integral goal, this is not the way. The world continues to exist. People continue to suffer. Ignorance and death continue to rule. Whatever the number of those who scale the heights of the spirit and pass into the beyond.
It is the characteristic of this integral yoga that one has to utilize the gains of the path of knowledge, of the state of liberation that one achieves,
for effecting the liberation of the collective nature from its thraldom to ignorance and falsehood. He has to bring this consciousness to bear upon the situation. He realizes the self within himself. He learns as a result of the pressure of the knowledge that is real to him, that the same self is also the self
of all.
He realizes that the self within him at a certain level is also the Lord of all nature, not only his nature, but all nature. And the Lord of all is also the absolute reality, the Brahman that transcends all thought. In fact, it is the transcendent that projects itself collectively as the universal self and individually as the individual self. The one who is liberated in the path of knowledge is not only free from involvement in nature, but he attains a perfect identity step by step with this triple self-formulation of the Absolute in the world. There are indeed number of things in the traditional way of knowledge that a seeker of this path can draw upon. Nobody leaps into the beyond at one step. They recognize in the Vedanta different gradations of the self. First, they speak of the universal self, the self that has become all these existences. This is the self of the waking condition, the self of which we in our waking states are parts. Next, they speak of the subtler, the perceptively creative soul, the self, divine self, that hatches, that creates on a subtler level forms which take material shape on earth later. He is called the dream self.
All of us, when we dream, pass into a state where we are parts of the dream, universal dream self. Thereafter, still subtle, there is what is called the sleep self, the wise one, the causal Purusha. He holds in his masked conscious sleep called sleep, the masked trance of consciousness, all things in seed form. That state is called the sleep self, the wise one, the prajna. Above all the three, there is the fourth one, the fourth self, the absolute transcendent. It is not that these four selves are separate selves ruling their four different empires. Each one of us has got those four levels, four planes of consciousness and being, and it is possible by developing the consciousness to realize our identity, to realize ourselves, to awake to ourselves on those four planes of existence. Simultaneously at a certain level, successively on a frontal level. It is a comprehensive realization to be awake on all these four levels, integrate these four levels of existence in one awakened, luminous consciousness. The bits of knowledge, the processes that have been perfected in the Jnana Yoga, the traditional path of knowledge, come in very handy, provided we know how to utilize them. Renunciation, yes. Rejection of the world, yes. But all at a certain stage. Sri Aurobindo says that in the life of many, a stage does come when things have to be absolutely renounced. Their attachment to certain things is so strong, certain natures, that certain surgical operations become necessary. They cannot be expected to untie, as the Upanishad puts it. You shouldn't have to cut a knot. They always speak of untying the knot. That is mother's way. She never advises or undertakes a radical cutting off. Patiently, with all her motherly patience, she unties all the tangled knots one by one, always with a smile, always with a pat if it should hurt the person concerned. These are the knots. In the Upanishad they speak of the knot of the heart, the Hridaya Granthi, where attachments, emotions, these keep the soul tied behind this veil. It is easy enough to dissolve the knots outside, but the knots within, they have to be untied. Sri Aurobindo says that for some, this tying is not, untying is not possible, because either as a result of the past or as a result of reckless living, involvement in the present life, they are so much attached that a radical turn back, a cutting off for some time, is
advisable. It is understood that once the separation from the Prakriti, from the lower nature is effected, thereafter the soul, the Purusha, the being, assumes his rightful control over nature. But before assuming control, one has to separate oneself from a thing that one would control. Separation, then assumption of control. The wise rule is the rule of the Gita. The austerities, if they be necessary, shall not be excessive. The Lord complains that those who practice strenuous austerity, deny food and drink to the body, deny experience to the soul of the in the world, they deny him who is seated in the chamber of the heart. He says, this titanic austerity, this asarik tapasya, as they call in Sanskrit, offends him, offends the Lord who is seated in the temple of the heart. There are gentler ways, more becoming ways of living the animality of nature and growing into full manhood. The process has to be patient. One has gently to disengage oneself from the knots of the body, as also from the knots of the life force. Sri Aurobindo makes a distinction of the life force that goes to support the body and calls it the physical prana, and that part of life force which goes to support the mind and calls it the psychic prana. First, one has to withdraw from entanglement in the physical prana. Thereafter, when one releases oneself from attachment to the physical body, when one no more feels tied up with the little life current that flows in one particular body, death loses its terror. Sri Aurobindo calls death as the badge of animality, and one who would rise above animalhood, arrive at full manhood, and proceed towards his godhood, has to wipe out this badge of animality. Any questions?
You were talking about the four states. I had the impression that they exist in us simultaneously all the time. Is it true that some part of us is always dreaming and some part of us is always sleeping?
That is what I said. On a certain plane, all the four are simultaneously active, and we can become conscious on all the four planes simultaneously in an integrated way. But it is not on the surface. It is in the depths, on the heights. Behind the surface, they all are alive.
Is it the same, let us say, that we experience at night when we're asleep? Is that the same type of sleep that's going on?
Yes, when you sleep, mostly we are in the realm of the dream self.
But it's the same one that's always going on?
Yes. There are certain Upanishads. Perhaps if you read my Essence of the Upanishads, they describe how many senses are active in each state of consciousness. You see, there are, for instance, there may be 24, they say, in the waking condition,
18 in dream condition, 14, like that. They make a distinction and they mention which senses are dormant, which senses are active in the different states. And what is called the sleep self, when we sleep, we don't go into that condition. It is only in certain trances when the senses are absolutely dormant that we pass into the consciousness that relates to the sleep self. When normally we sleep, we are still in the dream level, only we are not conscious on the recording level. We say, I had a dreamless sleep. But to have a dreamless sleep, as Mother once said, is a great feat. One arrives at it only in trance, when the whole consciousness is indrawn, organized, it must falls naturally around the silent self. You see. But that comes by yoga.
Then if we are conscious of all of those things, is that one of the possibilities of remaining conscious through, let us say, the action of the death movements?
If one is awake, if one's consciousness is organized, death does not make a difference. One passes through the experience of death as one passes through the gates of a house. Provided during the lifetime we have accustomed our multifold consciousness, it's lighter, he feels more powerful, he feels larger. And that is why in spiritual history, in the life of yogis, you find that they are more effective in their action on the world when they shed the physical instrument. One. Since nobody has any question, perhaps I could share this little talk I had with Mother on her bonfet. When I went to Mother and after the usual certain things that I do on her birthday, I gave her a bit of paper because I knew she was in such a hurry. At any rate, people around her were in such a hurry that I thought it best not to invite their cold stares. So I told Mother, I have written something here. Mother may kindly get it read later on. And I started taking the paper to hand it over to somebody. But she wouldn't leave. She held it. She said, is that long? I said, no. Then read it. And this is a few lines that I wrote without thinking that day exactly what happened. I usually get up by 1:30 in the morning. My sister prepares and gives me tea. She sits for meditation. I do my writing work. At that time, she mentioned something. I was thrilled, but I didn't say anything. Then when I went to the beach for running, I go for a run at about 2:30. That's the only exercise I do. So there, the first line came. I had not intended to write at all. And the first line came, I woke up, as it were, and allowed it to develop. After coming home, I wrote one or two other arrears of writings and then wrote this. The 21st of February is the day of days, that makes the whole year meaningful for us. Each day is precious because it leads to another 21st. Early this morning, my sister woke up shortly after midnight to find the whole air filled with the joyous cries of the gods, "Bon fête, bon fête, bon fête." Indeed, today is the bon fête of all of us. She says that when I read the sentence, mother was vigorously nodding her head. Today is the bon fête of all of us, humans, angels, gods, all rejoice in the new birth that the mother brings even physically to all. In consciousness, she is recreating us every moment of our lives. Today, we feel the very physical cells vibrating to a new breath. I burst with her love and call aloud, "Rejoice! The truth is here, the sole truth of which Sri Aurobindo speaks, the one by whom all live, who lives by none." Nowadays, she doesn't express things as freely as she used to some time before, because she once explained that once things are expressed, it immediately raises up so many elements, hostile elements. "Oh, I see you are saying this, let me show you." She said this is happening. That is why till a thing is realized, established beyond possibility of elimination, she does not wish to speak, and she asks all of us not to speak of anything in the process of growth in us, not even to think aloud. She says it raises certain vibrations. So she has not been telling things or expressing things freely. All the while, even when we are telling her things, reporting, she is, her mind is, consciousness is turned elsewhere. I don't think the progress of Auroville is to be measured in terms of so many buildings coming up, so many people staying. She said, if we want, we can fill up the whole of Auroville with useless people in one night. She said it last month. But she said we have to be extremely careful. Otherwise, it will become an ordinary town. We do not want it to happen. So we have to be extremely careful in our choice of men, of things, of everything. She, as far as I have studied, as far as I have known her reactions, she regards only the consciousness of people, how they react, how they act, rather than how much work is done in terms of bricks and mortar, of so many acres acquired, developed. But she feels, she can feel there the breath of the consciousness that is in each colony here, in each individual. And It is the duty of everyone, whether in the ashram or here, to see that for all that she has done for us and is doing, we should strive our best to keep our level of consciousness always at the highest we are capable of. If we do that, she says, there is a standing sanction from her that every wish, every aspiration at the height of our consciousness shall be fulfilled. Our responsibility is to keep ourselves at the zenith possible to us. She is fully aware of the difficulties, the nature of difficulties that are have to be faced in Auroville. But her stress is on development of consciousness, and she sees everything in terms of that. For her, outer difficulties are a faithful reflection of the inner obstructions put up by individuals living here. She is about 13 years ago, she once explained to me that as long as inmates of the ashram were solely devoted to yogic pursuits, had their mind fixed on the spiritual goal, she said she had absolutely no difficulty regarding finance. She had actually more than what was needed, and things used to go absolutely smoothly. It was only when more people started coming in for whatever reasons, when she had to admit more numbers as a result of the Second World War and the influx of the refugees from northern India, that a certain dilution took place. Ordinary desires and motive forces entered the atmosphere. And what is more important, she said, wastage, waste of things started. Since then, the flow of money and resources has been impeded, and the difficulty, acute difficulty of money, is an everyday affair. Sri Aurobindo, somebody asked Sri Aurobindo, why? I wrote to mother and asked, why is it that in every household outside, anybody praying to you, anybody writing to you of their financial difficulties, they get relief. Within a month, within a week, we get next letter that help has reached them, their conditions have improved. Now, why is it under your very nose that we are having this financial stringency? I asked mother. Mother said, I am helpless. It is governed more by the atmosphere, by the kind of thoughts, emotions, that are current in the atmosphere. They attract or they repel money. And this wastage is the first reason which repels the inflow of money power. Whether there is wastage in Auroville, it is for you to see. I am not competent because I do not see here. You live, you work. If each one of you were to take steps to eliminate wastage in the area where you have a say, that is the way to the elimination of general wastage, and encouragement, invocation of the necessary resources for the speedier building of Auroville. Perhaps, having said all this, I should wind up with a joke, not exactly a joke, but a remark with a very serious import. After all this, one day, a young boy got up at the question hour on the playground when mother was holding classes. I think it was on Wednesdays. Friday, she used to tell stories. It was on Wednesdays. So she said, he's a young boy at that time, he got up, mother, so much wastage is going on, sharing those writing like this, you are writing, but why are you allowing so much of wastage to go in the departments, in this building service, here, there, so much, everybody knows and you also know, but why are you allowing the wastage? Mother became serious and she said, the amount of wastage in money that is going on, it doesn't touch me so much as the wastage of spiritual energy that is going on. It is that which is depressing me. So that also is a point to ponder over. How much spiritual wastage is going on in each one of us, through each one of us, in moments of unconsciousness, or half-consciousness, or willful indulgence. Good.